It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Slightly favours the right footer here, but Griffiths, having got the goal, goes again!
Oh! Quick fire, then drags it down now. Long, we out. Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Here comes up, chance goal! Scotland have scored!
It's Evans!
It's Dykes! It's McGrath!
Welcome to the Hand and Roar podcast. This is not the recording we thought we'd be making this morning after Northern Ireland at Hampden. It was a bleak evening. Scotland 0, Northern Ireland 1. So that's 5 losses and 7 now for Scotland. And this, I think, the most worrying one. We had unfettered optimism a couple of months ago. That's now being replaced by increasing anxiety. Maybe that's justified or not. But 2 shots on target for Scotland. Northern Ireland had 1, and Steve Clarke pretty much beaten at his own game at Hampden. The sort of performance we've seen from Scotland and even Kilmarnock down the years that grinds out a result. And we were on the wrong end of it this time, unfortunately. So we're here to pour over the events with myself, Andy Barge, your host, and Rory Hamilton, commentator for Viaplay and various Scottish football clients, and Barry Anderson, writer for The Scotsman and the Edinburgh Evening News. Rory, you were there, as were you, Barry. Rory, what are your main reflections on last night?
Last night, a lot more concerning, I think, than Friday night, when I think there were real positives to take. I think some of the football we played was some of the best I've seen against a top-level nation. So it felt very much like last night that we might be able to carry that sort of form into it, and, you know, hopefully that would transpire into a result. I think everyone went there expecting both a performance and a result, and we didn't get either. So it does kind of feel like this, you know, international windows are few and far between and you need to make the most of them. And it feels like a bit of a missed opportunity, almost feels like we've gone backwards a little bit. But, you know, like Steve Clarke said in his post-match interview, you asked if he was concerned about this. And he said, look, you learn from these probably more than you learn from winning games. So I think that has to be the take from it, is that has to be a major learning curve of what you can and can't get away with, because I think we looked last night really passive, ponderous, slow with the ball, didn't really have that aggressive approach that I think we displayed so well in Amsterdam for an hour, let's say. And we just didn't really have that intensity, which I think would probably be the biggest concern. You're obviously sitting against a team that is going to, you know, sit with a sort of 4-5-1 in defence, which becomes difficult to break down. But, you know, you're going to have to do that against good teams. Not everyone's going to leave 3 up front and try and press you high. You've got to find ways to break that down. And I would have thought that we've got good enough players to be able to do that. But it never looked like we were going to score last night, which would be rather worrying.
Barry, Rory and Clark saying you learn more from these games. So what did we learned from watching Scotland last night, because the glass could barely have been fuller a few months ago. So how much has been spilled?
Yeah, a lot, I think. A lot has been spilled. I don't want to be doom and gloom about it. Part of me wondered during 2023 if that was the Scotland team peaking, clearly hoping that it wasn't. But my worry was that they could get into 2024 and end up going, you know, slightly down the other side of the hill, as it were. I think we learned last night that we badly miss Callum McGregor in the middle of the park. We badly miss Grant Hanley. For all people slag him off, Grant Hanley at centre-half is a huge player for Scotland, and we badly miss Aaron Hickey at right wing-back. I think that's the biggest concern for me. Are all these three guys going to be fit? And Andy Robertson as well, now a concern, having gone off last night, are the four of them going to be fit for the Euros? Because I think, go back to the last Euros, when Tierney pulled out just before the opening game at Hampden against the Czechs, and we badly missed him. I don't think Scotland are a team for all that's a strong squad we've got. I think there are key players that we simply can't do without, and I would put certainly Hanley, Hickey and McGregor in that category.
Would you have Hanley in, even though he didn't play in the majority of the qualifiers?
Yeah. I think he starts in the middle of the back three. If you're playing a back three, I mean, I think he starts in the middle of it. Tierney on the left, obviously, and it's then between Portis and Hendry who plays on the right. If Hanley's fit, I think he starts. I think that's why he was in the squad initially.
I actually think Porteous's absence was slightly noticeable last night, Rory. I feel that Porteous is quite good at playing the ball from the back three position into midfield to break the lines and try and get Scotland going, rather than the horizontal between Hendry and Cooper that we saw for most of the evening.
Yeah, I was getting a bit fed up saying Tierney, Cooper, Hendry. It just seemed like the three of them were just touching the ball all the time and not really going anywhere with it. I've really liked Porteous in a Scotland jersey. I think he came in for that game away to Ukraine and put in the whole team put in a good defensive display, but he epitomised it. I think it took a while before we even conceded a goal with him in the team. He gives a sort of, from a defensive point of view, he gives an aggressive approach, which I like. And then with the ball, he's always been really handy with the ball. He's one of those defenders that's a wee bit happier to take a risk, which we didn't see last night so much. You get it a little bit from Tierney. I mean, I think Kieran Tierney was probably our best player on the night, but particularly down that right hand side, there were no risks being taken. It was always the easy pass, and I think that's something that Porteous, I think stepping out of Hibs almost felt like a really important thing for him, to take him. He looked like he'd got into such a comfort zone at Hibs where he was the main man and he could let other things distract him. I think when he goes up a level to play for Scotland, and I've not seen much of him since he's gone down to Watford, but when he plays for Scotland, it's like he doesn't allow the other things to distract him. He's so much more focused on the game, doesn't let the little silly things get to him and get involved in little other battles that can, which other players actually seem to get involved in last night. It got a little bit tetchy at times. Conor Bradley seemed to be winding up Tierney, and I think Trey Hume was getting in people's ears a little bit, and those are things where if you've got younger Northern Irish, less experienced players playing at a, you know, not as high a level for such a long time, you don't expect maybe your McTominays and Tierneys to bite on some of that.
What about John Souter then? I'm not sure how much of a difference he would have made last night, but if we're talking about players in defence that can get the ball rolling for Scotland into midfield and get us going with progressive passes or even carries forward through the thirds, are you surprised he didn't maybe get a look in last night, Barry? It didn't really go so well for him at left centre-back when he came on against Netherlands. Would he have justified a bit of a chance to wipe that slate clean last night against Northern Ireland, or was the damage done?
No, I wouldn't say it was damage done. I mean, you're right, he didn't probably do himself justice against Netherlands, but I think maybe just Steve Clapp wanted a look at Cooper to see how Cooper would fit in the middle of the three, and assess that from there. I think Souter's definitely better in the middle of the three, or potentially on the right. I don't think the left side suits him too much. The problem is, if you don't have Tierney on the left side of the back three, then, you know, who kind of steps in? McKenna and Cooper are different types. He hasn't called up Stephen Kingsley. So you don't really have a natural replacement for Tierney in that left-sided centre-back role. I think Souter will probably just about make the squad, I think, for the Euros. Whether he gets into the team or not is probably another matter. It might depend how he does in the final two friendlies.
There was just a real lack of cunning about the Scotland team last night, trying to figure out a way to get past the Northern Irish defence, that we're sitting deep, that we're saying, come on then, you figure this out because we're not going to let you through. There's just no penetration among the team. The passes weren't very crisp. The ones that were going forward, they were
half of them were at quite a slow pace. They weren't zipped into the feet of the striker or McGinn or Christie or whoever was up there. And I didn't see anyone really taking responsibility. Yeah, people were showing for the ball, but nobody taking responsibility, grabbing the game by the scruff and saying, right, I'm going to do something about this because nothing we're trying here is working. And I think a bit of individualism or a bit of risk-taking maybe would have paid off, Rory. Might not have, but the sort of rigid, robotic side-to-side passing, almost over-managed in a way, was bearing no fruit at all.
Yeah, that's where Barry makes a good point about Callum McGregor being missed, because I think he is somebody that does take a game by the scruff of the neck and is also probably used to having to marshal a team through trying to break down a pretty solid block that's lying in front of them. But yeah, there did seem a sort of distinct lack of energy. The first half in particular, I thought was pretty concerning. And you looked at that and probably those players in more forward positions that you would expect to be the ones creating or breaking into the box. And you thought, who's really impacted the game here? Dyke struggled to get involved. McGinn certainly didn't have the influence that you expect from him. McTominay, you didn't see him making those bursting runs into the box. And a lot of that will stem from what we've been saying beforehand, is that sort of almost pedestrian element coming out from the back. You know, it would go between the back three. It would go out to mainly to the right back or right wing back in Patterson, and then it would come back. And there wasn't really anyone looking to, as you say, take control of it. I thought Andy Robertson played really, really high up. And it didn't, and maybe that was to encourage Tierney forward, but it meant then we didn't have quite such an out ball out there. They were maybe more looking to swing those big diagonals out to him. So it just seemed like the balance wasn't quite there, but it's something they have to figure out, because there'll be at times, you know, say if Hungary or Switzerland go one up against us, then they'll quite happily sit in and leave one up top, and you've got to figure that out. I don't think it's something that Germany will do, because they're more likely to, if they get ahead, want to push on, and their results over this international window just show, yeah, if anyone thought that they weren't a team anymore, well, forget that. So yeah, there will be moments in those games where we are asked to dictate and to break a team down as we expect others to try to do to us. You can't have it all your own way, yeah, and wanting to sit in and then break with energy, because not everyone's going to allow you to do that.
I thought we actually started for the first 10 minutes not too badly. Christie had quite a good drive through the middle and didn't catch his shot at all. It went wide. McTominay won the ball and drove forward, got his free kick, which was poor in the end. And then McGinn put in a good cross for Robertson at the back post, which was getting cut back towards maybe Dykes or someone who was in there, and it got put behind for a corner. In the opening 10, I thought, right, okay, we're taking the game to them here. This is good. And then genuinely nothing after that, nothing. There was from their goal, which we'll come to, they should have scored again to make it 2-0 before halftime. Shea Charles missed a big, big chance, didn't he? But in the second half, Cooper's header from the corner was kind of glancing one, which went wide. Shankland had a great opportunity where he shot at the defender. It was blocked. Ferguson had his header. That wasn't going in anyway. I think that was going over. And Shankland, he was unfortunate with his header at the end. That was quite a brave effort, the one that just looked over the crossbar. But generally, there were no serious chances for us to take note of during that game. Not really any for Northern Ireland either. There was a half chance that they scored from. They then missed a good opportunity. But going forward, there was just no real creativity to carve out proper chances. So where do we fix that, Barry? We have creative players, we have clever players, intelligence in the team. What is missing in this sort of situation? Do we need more pace? Is it an individualism and a bit more guile? How do we do it? How do we get past this?
I would say generally, I think if you have to move the ball at a quicker tempo for a start. The Scotland team is good at keeping possession, which is a positive. Let's not kid ourselves on, we've surrendered possession over the years far too often in games, big games and small games. But keeping possession's fine as long as it's with a purpose and you're moving it at a tempo and you're moving the opponents around. So if you're having to go side to side, then go side to side, but go side to side quickly so that that opens your opponents up. So they're trying to shuffle across, and that's how gaps appear. I actually thought that when Lewis Ferguson came on, he almost created gaps by himself, because you would see him dropping off. He was playing a kind of advanced midfield role. You would see him dropping off a little bit deeper, and then he would dart back up into a gap in between their defence, thereby dictating what pass should be played by one of the deeper Scotland midfielders. And he got through a couple of times, just didn't quite get anything from it. I think if you're looking at how we break teams down, you know, you've got Gibraltar and Finland to play. I think they'll be different games, Gibraltar in particular, and you should be able to take care of those two ahead of the Euros. But if your final three games before the opening Euro game against Germany, your final three games are Northern Ireland, Finland and Gibraltar, how do you then get up to that level to play the Germans in the first game? It's a huge jump. Even with everybody fit, it's a big jump. But if we end up without two or three important players, it's an even bigger jump. That's my concern. And I think in terms of creating opportunities, we have to make sure that we've got options in the wide areas. And if we're playing wing backs, which Steve Clark habitually tends to do, I don't think that a wing back can be expected to be a defender, be a midfield player when the ball's in midfield, and be a winger when the ball's in attack. I just think that's too much for one person. So if you're a wing back and you're covering the defensive stroke midfield area, you need somebody pulling wide further forward. And Scotland didn't have enough of that. Previously, we've had it reasonably well when we've played this kind of 3-4-3, 5-4-1 setup where McTominay would be wide right and McGinn would be wide left and behind the striker. That's worked reasonably well. I didn't think it worked last night, but there wasn't enough of that.
Rory, there are options for this Scotland team. We thought we'd found, and did certainly during the qualifiers, a bit of a winning formula. The friendlies that we've played since then have all been against strong, strong teams, with draws against Norway and Georgia to end the campaign. What's changed in your eyes since then?
It's difficult to say whether they've just lost a little bit of that belief and intensity, because you know the personnel haven't changed. You know, we did lose Andy Robertson towards the end of those group games. There were a few players out. So at that stage, I thought, you know, maybe this is just a little bit of going through the motions, qualifications being secured, and so you maybe just lose that edge a little bit. I thought coming into these games, we've been not far off full strength, and to not play in that same manner that we had been is a bit of a worry, but we know that those players can do it. I don't think Steve Clark won't make major changes in personnel. You know, we know roughly, maybe give or take, two players who will be starting against Germany as long as everyone's fit. So to me, it's all about just building up that belief and confidence. I think the last time we had as poor a performance as that was over in Dublin, and the response that they got thereafter for a good long spell was superb. And it was immediate. So Steve Clark's got that in him. And I think, you know, maybe something like this will just allow him to create, not quite siege mentality, but allow him to say to these players, look, people have stopped believing in you. Go and show them. That's when his loyalty comes into effect, I think, is that the players then have a trust and belief in what he's doing, because he sticks by them. So I think that's really important at this time. I don't think he'll go, you know, too big on how much of a, you know, whether this is a disaster or not. They've got to fix it in 11 weeks, of which they'll be together probably for 2 weeks before the tournament. I'm guessing 10 days or something like that. So it will just probably be trying to repeat what happened post-Dublin, I think, and get them back to playing the way that we all know that they can.
If this run will end, it's Gibraltar next. We won't fail to beat Gibraltar. We will win that game. That's fine. So at least the run will end. Don't laugh, Barry. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It's Gibraltar. Come on.
I've got the full-on fear, Andy, and I don't mind admitting that. Full-on fear ahead of the Euros now. Thanks to these last two games.
If we stumble against Finland, it could still be, oh, we're going in with only one win in such and such. But it won't be Scotland have not won a game since the end of the Euros, or whenever our last one was, Cyprus, I think, in September or October. So that will end. That'll be fine. As far as the belief goes, Rory, you kind of brought me onto something here. I want to talk about the crowd. Boos at half-time, boos at full-time, certainly. We were getting frustrated after 40 minutes when Shea Charles missed that chance. There were exasperated groans and murmurs and boos. There was a backwards pass from Gilmore just before half-time, which brought boos. Are we overreacting here as a fan base after a brilliant campaign? Do we need to show more patience in the stands in that sense? I'm not suggesting, I don't think you were booing on commentary, Rory, but from what you're
I'm there like I would be as a fan, but you need to keep your emotions in check a little bit more. Booing is something that it's come into the modern game a lot more. And booing your own team is something I've never done, and I don't think I ever will. It's completely counterproductive, and it's not to criticise the supporters that do it, but I don't understand it. I don't think it does anyone any good. It feels like a bit of entitlement of, I think I deserve that we should be winning this. You know, you got to go out and produce results. You know, even if you're playing against a team that are ranked 40 places below them, you know, you've still got to go out and beat them. You've got to put on a performance. And okay, if you're a bit short, I don't think that warrants being booed.
Well, can you differentiate between boos at the end of a game and boos during a game and during a particularly slow passage of play or an overhit long ball, for example?
Yeah. Yeah. But or if you're maybe seeing traits, if passes are constantly going backwards, then yes, you know, you can make your feelings known. Or if maybe you feel like the team should be playing with more intensity, more attack focused, then there are, yeah, I guess, ways of doing that. Booing a result, I don't think it gets you anywhere. And booing at halftime, not for me.
Well, it's not something we've really seen all that often. Barry under Steve Clark, can't really remember. I think we went in 1-0 down against Kazakhstan just after he came in. We probably got booed at that point, but can't really think of many others.
No, there haven't been. I do wonder if some folk maybe got a little bit carried away with what happened last year. You know, the momentum that was built up and some of the results we got, beating Spain and all the rest of it. And then, you know, they've expected, okay, you've lost to Holland. It's like, okay, well, we'll be beating Northern Ireland anyway, and then it's not materialised. And it's, you see it a lot, but I see it at club games as well. I don't want to say that it's just a younger generation thing, because I don't think it is. I think, you know, people of my age and older as well are doing it too. But it is almost like a trend now where in football, you know, you've seen it yourself on social media. If your team doesn't win on a Saturday, then sack the manager and sell all the players, sort of thing. You know, I see that creeping in too often. It's not Rory's right. It's not a nice trait. It's not something from a Tartan Army's perspective. It's not something that's been done. Really, I remember Gary McAllister getting booed years ago. I can obviously say how many of those were genuine Scotland fans, or if it was just people that turned up to the game on that night. But those instances have been few and far between, and the Scotland fans are generally well recognised for their backing of the team. So yes, last night was concerning. I don't think booing during play is always a good option. And, you know, unless you're like 5-0 down, stuff like that, then you can maybe understand it. But yeah, hopefully what everybody needs is a pickup now. You need a pickup in June, in the two games in June before the Euros. That now becomes even more imperative after these two results.
Well, we've all heard that at Hampden, sorry Andy, when the team loses a goal, or you know, they maybe get a corner when they're behind, and you hear that roar pick up.
Yeah,
and that must be inspiring to players. I think, say, if you get to the end of this you know, little camp that they've had, and the last thing that you remember is getting booed off the park. Mm-hmm. I don't think that sits very well for players going back to their clubs to then return thinking, oh, well, you know, they've got the game in Gibraltar and then this big send-off against Finland. You know, what if they don't win against Finland, do people boo them to the Euros? I think it's all about positivity, and even if they don't play well, then you still get behind them.
It affects players 100%, Rory. Players do keep that sort of thing in mind, and it affects them the next time they then turn out for their country or their club if it happens at club level. Again, go back to McAllister. McAllister retired not long after he was booed by Scotland fans at Celtic Park that night. So I'm not suggesting any of the players are going to do that this time with Euros on the horizon, but it does impact people's mindset, and it does just make them a little bit hesitant, nervous, whatever, the next time they come out. And we don't want that. Certainly on the back of such a strong qualifying campaign, we need everybody firing on all cylinders for the Euros.
I actually think as a crowd at Hampden, it was a friendly, but I generally think that we are quite a reactive crowd, not proactive. I don't think that we encourage the players on our own. I think that we need to be encouraged as a fan base to reciprocate that back to them. Now, if I compare the Scotland fans to the Irish last night, they didn't stop for 90 minutes. They were jumping about, singing. It was great. And I include myself in the conversation here. I'm not really much of a singer or a shouter at games. But as a fan base wider, I think we're quite disjointed really around Hampden. There's nothing really that to lead us. I mean, look what the Celtic Rangers have got for their wee sections, and Aberdeen have got that behind the goal as well. I'm sure various clubs in Scotland do it. It kind of works. It just kind of keeps things going among the stadium. I wonder if there is an avenue that we could get something like that down in the corner at the West Stand between the North and the West, where there's a big congregation, and get a group of people who are members of the supporters club or whatever to join in and get a couple of hundred that can keep the atmosphere going during a game and move us on from singing just the John McGinn song. We don't really have a very big songbook at the moment, do we? We'll be coming, kind of comes and goes throughout the game. John McGinn, Flower of Scotland maybe once or twice, but we don't really have a very big song. Even the Dyke song, we didn't have a great game last night. The McTominay song, I mean, didn't hear them last night. So I wonder if we need, or not need, but could benefit from a little area, like Tartan Army area, and between the North and the West Stand, that could keep the atmosphere going during the game. Because it really dips last night, and I think that as a supporter group, Rory, I don't know about you, have got a great view sitting around Hampden from your commentary gantry. It just gets really flat, and I don't really think we are, or we know how to carry on as a crowd unless we are being given something to sing about, i.e. a goal or a continuous piece of pressure.
Yeah, and you know, it's sort of chicken and egg. You're reacting to what's going on in the pitch. That generates the crowd and creates more of it. If it's not happening on the pitch, then it doesn't happen. If it's not happening in the stands, it doesn't seem to happen on the pitch. So, you know, you're right. And maybe a section is something that could happen. You know, there's a big difference. You talk about the Northern Ireland fans, and they were obviously very vocal the whole time. It's a big difference, as you'll know, from being an away fan to being a home fan. You know, a lot of the time, you know, you've come straight from work. You maybe managed to meet up with your mates for half an hour beforehand, then it's to the stadium. Whereas when you've been an away fan, you're travelling together. You've probably been in the pub for a few hours beforehand, and it's much more of a kind of party atmosphere. I've been in plenty of away ends with Scotland fans where you go, I didn't even hear the home fans, which probably Northern Ireland fans were saying last night, because they were generating a lot of the atmosphere. The result and the way that the game's panning out does play into a lot of that. There's probably only a few countries or teams that you can go to where there's just a constant. I mean, I did Frankfurt Aberdeen earlier on in the year in the Europa League, and wow, that was just awesome. From the Frankfurt, one end was all standing, like of a 60,000-odd seater stadium, and the entire end was standing, and they did not stop from about an hour before kickoff to an hour after full time. It was unreal.
I'm not suggesting that.
No, that would be brilliant. Can you imagine that?
There must be a way around it, Barry. I don't know if in journalistic circles if there's ever been murmurs of this kind of thing ever being considered or introduced by the SFA. Are there groups that would be keen on taking the lead on it at all?
No, I don't. I haven't heard of anything, you know, in terms of something like this being in the pipeline from the SFA side of things. I think you would definitely find groups of people who would be keen to take it on. I think it's more difficult in an international context than it is at club context because, you know, there's not season tickets, if you like. I know you can buy this sort of same seats for five game package and all that sort of thing, but trying to get this a set amount of people to sit in the same section is difficult. So you need the SFA on board to sort that out and help you arrange that. So it would need somebody to take the lead on that. And go in and try and organise it. But yeah, it would definitely help. Because, I mean, Hampden, I always think the atmosphere at Hampden is, it touched on what I said earlier, dictated by Scotland's tempo, the tempo that Scotland play at. If Scotland come out and they don't need to score early doors, just if they come out and they're playing at a tempo and they're going after the opponents and there's fire in the belly, that gets the crowd on side and you progress from there. Whereas last night, if you come out, there was a decent start, Andy, I agree with that totally, the first 5-10 minutes. After that, it just kind of fell off a cliff. And from there on, the crowd falls off the cliff with you and the atmosphere goes with it. And it's a vicious circle. So I always think if the players are at it and they're, you know, full pace, full tempo, then even if they're getting beat, if they're still playing at a tempo and they're pushing the opposition back and trying to get an equaliser, the crowd's with them. I always feel that's the case.
I feel that I think generally we have to carry some responsibility as a supporters group to urge and encourage the team on when things aren't going so well, though. And there are reasons, and I get why it could go quiet and lackluster at times, but we're there to support the team, and I think we could be better at it when they are not inspiring us to their best as they have done over the last year. I think it works both ways, but yeah, Rory's right, chicken egg. It can be hard to strike that balance, yeah. And Rory, I know you're short for time. Do you need to nip off?
Yeah, probably will.
Okay, sorry. Well, that's no worries. You can miss the Nathan Patterson discussion, which we're about to get stuck into.
But you know what? I did have something to add on that because, I mean, obviously he has had a bit of a difficult time over these two games. But he is a quality footballer. Nathan Patterson I typed in the numbers into my phone just beforehand, and if you add up the minutes he's played of league football in his career, he's played 30 games of 90 minutes. Like, he's not an experienced football player, and that's over quite a long time. So, you know, he was 27 games at Rangers before he left, then he's gone down to Everton, didn't play for the first 6 months, injured, and it's been a tough old time. And I don't know if the situation at Everton right now is doing him any favours. He can't really get a look in at the team. He's been kept out by significantly older players who are at the end of their career. And I just feel like that might be something that he probably needs to resolve sooner rather than later. Obviously, there's no transfer window at the moment, but there's no doubt he's a good player. And I think we were just seeing a bit of an effect of his confidence being really low at the moment, and these games won't have helped, and the reactions from the stands are inevitable, but also won't help. So, yeah, I think he's good. I would love to see Hickey back as well and push for that right wing back spot, and maybe that'll be the sort of thing that can drive Nathan Patterson on to the player that we know he can be.
Because we saw that. We saw him when he first came into the Scotland team. He was assisting. He scored away to Moldova. And at this point, Hickey hadn't really stamped his authority in the team. And we all thought, superb. Nathan Patterson here is our right back for the next X amount of years. This is a gift from God here, that we have a right back who is as effusive as in his attacking play, as solid as he is defensively. And then it's just kind of both dwindled, unfortunately, in both senses for Scotland. But yeah, we'll continue chatting about Paterson for the time being. Rory, thanks very much for sparing half an hour of your time to jump on. See you soon, mate.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
Well, Barry Paterson does look low on confidence. I'm sure that does stem from a lack of playing time down at Everton and maybe not being able to respond to the mistake that he made for Northern Ireland's goal, which I don't really want to dwell on too much because even the best players in the world have made mistakes that have led to goals. So that can happen, all right? But just generally, decision-making seemed a bit off. And his passes as well against the Dutch at the weekend where his radar wasn't quite lined up. The other options at right back, should Hickey not make it, and if Paterson continues to be frozen out at Everton, would be Ralston, who's in the squad, and Ross McCrory, who's the starting right back for Bristol City at the moment. Do either of them tickle your fancy for a potential right back slot if Aaron Hickey doesn't make the Euro squad through fitness?
Yes, I think. I mean, Ralston's come in and done okay for Scotland so far. I don't think he's at the level of Hickey or either Paterson. When Paterson's on his game and he's fine on all cylinders, I don't think Ralston's quite at that level. But he could come in and do a job, as could Ross McCrory, but I think that's highly unlikely given Steve Clarke and John Carver have made it clear that the group that they have with them at the moment for this camp is pretty much what they'll go with. And they're not expecting any wild card entries, as they put it. So you almost kind of need to have three levels here. You need to have your first pick, I think, is Aaron Hickey if he's fit. Paterson is the backup, and Ralston is the backup for Paterson if Paterson is somehow not quite at the right kind of match sharpness, as it were, if he's not played enough games for Everton. So it's a difficult one, and that quite often Scotland, because Scotland, the way that the Scotland team is set up, your right wing back as well as your left wing back, but probably more the right wing back, is quite often primarily a defender and needs to defend quite a lot, because we're sitting in, we're camping in, and then we're trying to hit on the counter attack, particularly against bigger nations. So your defensive side of your game's got to be pretty solid, and Paterson certainly wasn't last night, as you've touched on, Andy. I think it's important to remember that he has had a number of really strong performances for Scotland in the last couple of years, despite not always being, you know, a regular at club level. So hopefully last night is just an off night. Everybody has them. Nobody should hold it against them. If he comes out the traps flying in the next two games, then you would expect him to start against the Germans. My concern is if Germany start Florian Wirtz wide on the left side, then we could be in bother. Down that flank, that's probably a problem to deal with later on, but at the moment you just need to pick who is actually going to be your right back and who's the one in form. So that's obviously for Steve Clarke to decide over the game against Finland and Gibraltar, and it's getting to the nitty gritty time, isn't it, where people need to stake your claim. It's sink or swim, and you're either going to be there or you won't.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We'll have just a quick look at how the nations that we've been drawn against got on last night. So Germany beat Netherlands 2-1, and that comes after them beating France the other night. We'll see what was the Switzerland's score.
The Swiss had a draw.
Switzerland, they beat Ireland 1-0, the Republic of Ireland 1-0.
Switzerland drew 0-0 in Denmark and then beat Ireland 1-0, and then Hungary beat Turkey. Turkey 1-0 and then Kosovo 2-0 last night. So,
Christ.
Everybody except us is actually doing very well.
Yeah, Germany. It's about Germany's team, because it's weird, isn't it, how things can change so quickly. In October, it was, I think we could do a job in Germany. They're not all that, and we're flying right now. And then all of a sudden, we've stumbled. Germany have picked it back up, and And yeah, they look like a serious force to be reckoned with again. Yeah, their midfield, Toni Kroos has come back. That probably makes a big difference. He's playing in centre mid for them again. Ilkay Gundogan, Musiala, Verts. Kai Havertz was the starting striker, but it was Fulkrug that came on and scored the winner. They've got a lot of guys on the bench, mind you, that I'm not really that familiar with. I suppose it's like Benjamin Henrichs.
A lot of the bench is more younger players, but their starting lineup is very experienced. One of the key things for me is playing Gundogan. They're playing Gundogan like a number 10, effectively, which I think is actually his best position.
Aye, well, but that's the thing. Look, we played really well against Holland, probably because, and we got into good positions against Holland, probably because they weren't sitting as deeply and as rigidly as Northern Ireland. I can't imagine Germany will do that, so perhaps we're actually better suited to play against a team like Germany or maybe even Switzerland, who will come at us a bit more and allow us the space to work in. But the problem is that what if we do find ourselves up against a team who play a counter-attacking style, or if Hungary or Switzerland take the lead and then just camp in, because they've seen on this evidence that we struggle to penetrate a defence that just sits on the brink of their own third is the issue, I would think, Barry.
Yeah, it's, I don't think any of the teams that will play at the Euros will naturally just camp in. Germany certainly won't. In fact, their front four, if you look at it, is actually quite frightening, with Havertz, Gundogan, Wirtz and Musiala. That gives me a shudder down the spine just thinking about it. But in Switzerland and Hungary, I've got plenty of attacking threat if you look at their teams. So, and we are the lowest ranked nation out of the four in terms of the world rankings. So they will see us probably as the weakest nation, the weakest opponent. So all three of them are probably likely to come and attack. But as you say, if they then get a goal and they're happy to sit, and after that, how do we break them down? We need Callum McGregor. We need his ability to pass through lines. At some point, if McGinn and McTominay aren't moving the way you need them to move in terms of getting in between centre backs and full backs and making those runs in the channels, then you need a Lewis Ferguson to come on and do that. And you need somebody who can put the ball in the net up top. That's probably the biggest issue, I think. Is it Shankland? Is it Adams? Is it Dykes? My gut instinct is that Steve Clarke will go with Adams as his starting striker against Germany. That might change to one of the other two, possibly Shankland, depending on how things go over the three games. But I suspect that Adams is going to be the starter.
Shankland's chances, he was close to the defender that blocked his shot, and he made decent contact on the swivel. Could have put it either side of the defender, maybe, but who am I to judge? And then the header that went over the bar, that was a decent effort. But he did more when he came on than Dykes did for the hour that he played, I think. And Adams, in both games, felt like he barely touched the ball over this international break.
Yeah. Didn't have an awful lot of game time, should probably point out, but he was very deep when he was steeped. I don't know if that was an instructional thing or if he just took it upon himself to drop off and try and get into pockets of space and let Shankland stay really high last night when he came on. So, but Adams is the one, out of the three, Adams is the quickest, which, as we all know, is a factor at international level. And I think that might be what swings it in his favour against Germany come the opening game. But Shankland's the one in best form. I think it might boil down to, does Steve Clarke view the Scottish Premiership as an equal level to the English Championship? Or does he feel the English Championship's higher? If he feels it's higher, then he's going to start Adams, I suspect.
Yeah, I think he'll start Adams as well. But he has played, I know, was Adams injured for quite a bit last season? Because he did start Dykes in a lot of big games for Scotland last season.
Yeah, Adams had an injury, but Dykes... I really like Dykes. I think Dykes has got so many good qualities and he's been a terrific centre-forward for Scotland for, two or three years now.
But not in a game against an opposition like last night, is that fair to say?
Yeah, there are certain games where he's not going to unlock a defence. And last night was a good example of that.
There are a few shouts on Twitter for Tommy Conway to get a look in. It's too late now, I would imagine, for Tommy Conway, unless there are a couple of injuries up front. Same with Ben Doak, who needs to get fit at Liverpool first before he's even considered. But if we're talking about Nathan Patterson as being inexperienced, Ben Doak's played, counting one hand maybe, the amount of games he's played for Liverpool this season before his injury. And look, experience isn't always direct. You can't always hold it in direct correlation with what a player will bring to a team. For example, Rooney, Euro 2004, but like there are special cases, and he was one of them. Whereas I'm not sure Ben Doak's going to have an impact on a Scotland team like that. And he will be unleashed for Scotland at some point. I don't think it'll be this summer. There are wingers out there, right? I think ship sailed for Ryan Fraser, Barry. It would appear.
Yeah.
Harvey Barnes, there were chat. Well, I think he's injured again for Newcastle anyway, isn't he? And I don't really think wingers are our bag at the moment. I mean, Forrest is kind of in the periphery at Celtic, and he's had loads of chances for Scotland. Not really too sure off the top of my head how many others we would have. Scott Wright at Rangers. Anyone else winger wise that could come in and give us
Ryan
that option?
Well, not wingers, but Ryan Hardy's obviously at Plymouth has scored a few goals. But again, if he was going to get an opportunity, they would have given him one by now.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll see him before the Euros.
And there's a few shouts and mentions for Danny Armstrong, purely because of his crossing ability and his accuracy with putting the ball in behind. I don't think he's near the squad either.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No. I think the players that we have, you know, you look at what McGinn has done for Scotland over the years, McTominay, so they're your two inside forwards, as it were, in behind the striker. They're your two attacking midfielders. I'm happy enough to go with them because I don't think we have better options, and both of them are proven at international level and have scored really important goals for Scotland and a lot of them. But we need them to be a bit more dynamic, and we need people around them to be a bit more dynamic, and we need to play the ball at a higher tempo in order to get the best out of them.
McTominay was deeper though last night. So what's the best place or the idea with McTominay? Is it as one of the two alongside either Gilmore or McGregor, or does he take... When McGinn's not going to get dropped, so does he take Christie's place?
I think he takes Christie's place, yeah. If everybody's fit, then Gilmore and McGregor are your two centre midfield players. You've got your wing-backs outside them. And then in the final third of the pitch, you've got McTominay in a sort of inside right number 10 position, McGinn inside left number 10 position, and then your striker, whoever it is, Adams or Shankland or whatever.
So McGregor so straight back in,
3-4-2-1 type system.
McGregor straight back in, as far as you're concerned, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. If he's fit, or you know, even close to fit, I think he'll be in the team.
Very possibly. Even though by the time the Finland and the Gibraltar friendlies come along, it could be over a year since he played for Scotland. Do you think he could get back in at the expense of another centre-half? Probably in the squad, Cooper or Suter, I would think. Hanley would get picked ahead of McKenna. Maybe McKenna?
No, I think McKenna will be in. I think when he's played that left side of the back three, he's done okay. He's been fairly decent there when Tierney hasn't been available. So I would, if he's fit, I would expect him to be there.
And the biggest clamour coming into this international break was Lewis Ferguson. Nearly said Lewis Stevenson there. Lewis Ferguson. Has Lewis Ferguson played his way any closer to a potential starting spot? Is he further away from a potential starting spot, or just where he was before these two games?
I think he's a little step closer. I thought, particularly against Northern Ireland, he was a kind of bright spark when he came on the second half. Again, his movement was good and he got through the lines. And he made the runs, as I said earlier, he made the runs which dictated the delivery of the pass rather than waiting for the pass to be delivered and then trying to get in behind to get on the end of it. So I don't think he's at a point yet where you would say, yes, he's going to be in the team or he should be in the team, but I think he's getting there. The issue is, who do you leave out? He's not got a lot of international experience, so if it's the opening game against Germany, Steve Clarke likes international experience, and the more the better. And I know people point out, oh, well, he's too loyal. And yes, there's an argument for that. But when you're going into the opening game of a European Championship where the pressure's going to be massive, the eyes of the continent are going to be on you, you're playing the host nation, you need people who you can trust, who you can rely on, who've been over the course before and been around the block. And I think by and large, we know who those guys are for Scotland. So you can pick your team from you know, 11 out of 12 or 13, I think.
Well, I thought Gilmore had a brilliant game on Friday, wasn't it, when we played in Amsterdam? I thought Gilmore was excellent before he got subbed off. Yeah. Last night, I thought he was fine. I thought he was fine, Gilmore, last night. I wouldn't say that he had a great game. Don't think he was awful. But it just wasn't as good as he was on Friday. I don't know, maybe if McGregor's fit, it would be McGregor and McTominay there and McGinn and Christie. I think he likes Christie, you know. Well, he obviously likes Christie, but I think Christie does normally turn up for us.
Yeah, that is a valid point. I don't think you should write Christie off. Obviously, scored some big goals for Scotland down the years. Where McTominay comes in, I think it's just an opinion. If you take McTominay out of that attacking midfield role that we spoke about a minute ago, just in behind the striker, and put him as one of your two orthodox centre mids, I think you lose a bit from him. You lose his impetus in the final third, and he's okay. He can still get into the box from there, but it's clearly he's got further to go, and therefore it's a more difficult challenge to get into the penalty area and get goals.
Yeah, he times his arrivals, as you saw against Spain, for example. At home. Georgia at home, the start of the second half, arriving. Is that from deep, or is that as one of the two behind striker?
I think it was one of the two behind. I could be wrong. I'd need to double check how they set up in those games. But I certainly think he's better as an advanced midfielder. I don't think he's a number six, as they call it.
Yeah, but he's certainly not a screening midfielder as we thought he was for so long. He's not an anchor. Yeah. And I'd say for at least 2 years in a Scotland jersey, before he was moved to be part of the centre-back three during Clark's experimentation, that we all thought McTominay was an anchor, a holding midfielder. And it's evolution proves very much not. No, we need him going from box to box, not sitting in front of our box. But yeah, McGregor, Clark's a massive, massive fan of Cal McGregor. I think he will come back in. And from the comments on Twitter, when I asked last night, you know, what are everyone's thoughts ahead of the podcast recording today, a lot of the replies stem around tempo, too slow. And I think we all pretty much agree that's something that Cal McGregor would arrest, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's his game, isn't it? Getting the ball, moving it across side to side if need be until a gap opens up. And when the gap does open up, then he's there and the pass is played quickly. Into feet or in behind.
But predictability is another one. Just a bit too slow and pedestrian and easy to suss out for a team that were sitting back. I mean, I saw it loads when I was working for Kelly under Clark. Teams did not know where to turn. When it was the two banks of four at that point. Jones was wide on one side, Chris Burke on the other, and Dicker and Power, and the four of them would just sit in front of the back four. Maybe sometimes it'd be Greg Stewart or whoever else was up with Brophy. It certainly wasn't Chris Boyd, but maybe Brophy would come back and help in that kind of bit between the midfield and the striker as well. And it would just be a nightmare for teams to try and work through. And last night, that's kind of what Clark was faced with. They had a five and a four and just gave us no room to build triangles or any constructive, incisive passing. And I don't think that they would be overcoached to the extent that they have nothing else to try. But I'm sure that players like Christie and Gilmore and all that, they have the wherewithal and the footballing intuition to think outside the box at a time when the initial instructions aren't working, unless the manager at the side is explicitly telling them to do it again and again and again. I'm not sure how rigid it would be from Clark, like what he's telling them to do, but there are there were no signs last night of anybody doing anything creatively unusual or out of the blue to find a way past a defence that was not breaking sweat, to put it bluntly.
Yeah, we lacked an edge, didn't we? That was we lacked a spark in the final third. As Scotland teams have done down the years, you know, quite often, and that's cost us problems, and it will cause us problems in the Euros if we don't get it sorted out. I still think that Scotland got schooled a little bit last night by Northern Ireland doing to them what Scotland have done to other teams in the past couple of years under Steve Clarke, just you know, getting a goal, sitting in, being difficult to break down, hitting on the counter attack if opportunities arise. And I think we probably have to get back to doing that a little bit. We're clearly better at keeping the ball, and we want to be able to go forward and move the ball with tempo and purpose when we have it. But when we don't have it, the last four games we've been far, far too wide open defensively. Mm. And that's something that we need to address.
Well, that's the thing.
Before you think about further forward, you need to make sure that you're solid at the back.
I think we're at the stage now with Scotland fans where we're not naive. Well, I think generally we're not naive enough to think otherwise, but we don't have any issue with pragmatic football if we are resolute and capable in the counter. We are capable in the counter. We've seen it in the past. But we're not being strong at the back right now, which is the issue with playing pragmatic football, if we're leaking goals. And you're saying Hanley could maybe be a solution to that. But that's 19 goals in 7 games. It's just not like Steve Clarke at all. Granted, yeah, we've played France, Spain, the Dutch in there as well. Who other? We had another big opponent. Who was it? And England. And then 5 goals against Georgia and Norway as well. So, yeah, we are leaking goals. Friendlies, we don't do well in friendlies. I think it's 2 of our last 18 or 19 friendlies have been wins. That is going back to 1-0 at home against Denmark in 2016. I think it was Matt Ritchie, deflected winner, I'm pretty sure, that night. So since Denmark at home, 1-0 in 2016, we've won 2 friendlies out of 18 or 19, I think it was accounted. But since Denmark away in September 2021, the game where they beat us 2-0, we've won 15 of 21 competitive games. So we are, and have been, turning up when it matters over the last 3 years or so. Friendly wise, I mean, it looked like a friendly last night. It had that vibe of there's nothing at stake here. But yeah, I think what we need to do is find a way to get past and break down teams that are happy just to defend and force our hand, rather than it being the other way around and us being able to press high against a team that will pass it around at the back, like the Dutch, because Northern Ireland were going long for the majority last night, and then that doesn't allow us to win the ball high up again in transition. So yeah, I don't want to overreact, Barry. I'm aware of the context that we've had a great year of Scotland fans going. We're going to the Euros. I still feel optimistic that we can do damage in the group stage. I do. The opposition will be different to play against than Northern Ireland were last night. But I just think it's important that we learn how to play against opponents like Northern Ireland. We won't have to deal with it all too often over the next little while because we're in Nations League A now. But we might have a playoff at some point again in the next couple of years where we play a team like ranked lower than us or something. And I think it would just be handy as a squad of players to have up our sleeve a way to get past a stubborn defence that have no interest in doing anything but stopping us from breaking through them. And that's not a criticism of Northern Ireland. I admire teams that play to their strengths like that and don't care about the aesthetics of it. So, yeah, I have a big thumbs up for Northern Ireland in that regard. But I think that's really, from all the chat online and between you and Rory and I today, that's the kind of crux of it, isn't it? We must find a way to think outside the box or get past teams that are just camping on the edge of their own 18 with about 9 or 10 outfield players.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Andy. I would also add that we need to be far more solid defensively. and be able to shut up shop and close space, because I think we've been opened up, as I said, in the last four games far too easily. The Dutch were the top side, but you know, the Georgians, so you can't say they're a top side, albeit they've just qualified for the Euros as well, but I mean, you can't class them as a top side. Norway, you can't say they're a top side. Northern Ireland, you can't say they're a top side. I think if you're looking at a positive right now, you probably have to say, well, nobody should overreact, but there is justifiable cause for concern after, you know, the last seven games, really, but particularly the more immediate ones against Holland and Northern Ireland. But let's remember that Northern Ireland aren't going to the Euros. Wales now aren't going to the Euros, beaten in penalties. Republic Ireland aren't going to the Euros. It's only Scotland and England that are going to the Euros from the countries in, you know, the immediate vicinity. So that's an achievement in itself. But we can't just stop there. We have to, at some point, we have to actually get out of a group at a major finals. And that's what this is about. So there's no point just saying, oh, we're happy to be there. To me, that's not enough. We have to actually have a bit of ambition and try and get at least one stage further. So, yeah, if we can, what you're saying there about addressing lack of creativity in the final third and thinking a bit differently to get past a stubborn opponent, as well as being a bit more rigid at the back, then we'll give ourselves a far better chance.
Yeah, well, I think I heard the highlights, it's just under 80 days now until the first game against Germany. So without any more Scotland games now for, what will that be, just over 2 months? Yeah, we'll keep the build-up to the Euros coming on the Hampden Roar. So Gibraltar and Finland, the next friendlies at the start of June. So we will have our next instalment of the On The Plane series, hopefully this week. Get to arrange with Ben and Lewis, but hopefully this week. If not, it will be the start of next week. We've got, I think, 2, maybe 3 episodes still to go on that, and maybe a few things have changed for us after this international break, for certainty or uncertainty. I have the sports quiz back this Monday coming, so that's on April 1st at Walkabout. It'll be about 7:30, 7:45 start. If you fancy getting a few people together and coming along to Sports Quiz, Glasgow City Centre at Walkabout, it's just next to Cine World on Monday night. I've got a few new rounds up my sleeve, trying a couple of different things. So hopefully can see a few of you back there. I've had a few Hampden Roar groups turning up, listener groups turning up, and have won previously. So it'd be great to see a few of you come along. It's free entry and you can win a £60 bar tab if you and your mates ever fancy a day out. So 7:30, 7:45-8-ish at Walkabout on Monday if you fancy the sports quiz. Other things coming up, I have the audiobook of my book A Nation again, just about finished now, so that'll be getting released in April if you fancy listening to all the player audio and then talking about it rather than just reading about it on a page. I've got all the audio, it's clipped up, so full audiobook of A Nation again, telling the story of our qualification for the last Euros. So keep an eye out for that on Twitter. And lastly, please keep sharing, telling your friends, your family, your colleagues about the podcast. I do take a bit of a backseat on social media. I try to stay off it as much as I can, apart from when Scotland are playing, obviously. It's important to be visible on the socials. But generally, I'm not on Twitter all that much. So please leave a nice rating if you enjoy the pod. Can subscribe, leave a comment, just anything that can help share the word a wee bit online, because I'll be the first to admit that I don't spend too much time doing that. I try to stay away from it. So yeah, if you're enjoying the pod, thank you for listening, thank you for continuing to tell your friends about it, and we'll be back in the coming days, hopefully this week, maybe the start of next, for the next On The Plane instalment. In the meantime, Barry and Rory, who was on in the first half of the pod, thanks very much for coming on. And yes, we'll be back with the next pod very soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.